There's one. Set for stun.
Three guys sitting in a dark room that smells like bad cucumbers.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Inconceivable!
Now featuring 11. 11 listeners.
This is Jimmy. This is the Unique Geek.
And welcome to another edition of the Unique Geek. I am your host, John, and with me on these wonderful, wonderful 40 Days of Dragon Con podcast we're doing, as always, is the lovely, the beautiful, the ever so sweet, the Southern girl herself, Lee. How are you, Lee?
I am good, and I still want to know what you want.
Okay, well, I'm still...
If people have listened to these before, or anything else we do together, you want something.
Well, I mean, I still am looking for that free pass, and, you know, you give...
Not happening.
Everyone gives us free passes away for free, right? I mean, they're just
yeah, because, you know, us track directors just have, like, a pocket full of them.
Yeah, you do, don't you?
That is...
No. No.
My husband is even paying to go this year, because he's not working staff.
And of course, you know, actually, that's a good point. If you are staff, you do get a free pass, but you got to put in how many hours?
You got to put in 25 hours, and it's only free after your first year. The first year, it's either $20 or $25.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically about half price.
Sounds like
That's to kind of disencourage people, because we used to have people who'd say, oh, yeah, they'd work staff and then never show up.
Yeah, I was gonna say kind of a.
So yeah,
sounds like
they
somebody
gotta give
was burned.
You the $20 yeah. before they work, you know, before you give them the badge, and so even if they then don't ever work, you know who they are, so you can say, yeah, don't want them on staff anymore. But then also, you know, oh, and by the way,
right,
yeah.
Let me also.
Yeah, you do have to do 25 hours.
There's a, you know, last podcast we were talking to Alternate History, and it was, this is the same, we were recording this on the same day. There's a little behind the. Window or behind the curtain information for you, but so I had just again today gotten my progress report from Dragon Con, and I was flipping through it again, and of course we've already talked about the different world record attempts that are going to be going on. We talked about that with Regina,
yeah,
and also, but I noticed there, and we've talked a little bit, we've mentioned the Yule Ball before, but there's actually a couple of other parties that are going on that are listed here, and that's the Grand Pirate and Time Traveler's Ball, which of course is the Alternate History one, right?
Yes, that is correct.
That's hosted by Alternate History.
That is correct. That's going to be over in the Westin on Sunday. For those who aren't going to the Masquerade or will go to this party after the Masquerade is over. Yes.
Right. And then there's
they're in a really huge ballroom, so there should not be a problem getting in this year.
Now, the Yule Ball is part...
Of the young adult. They do it just like they do with Harry Potter. Actually seen some of the most amazing dresses that go very close to the movie there. So that is the Yule Ball is with Young Adult Lit as the Harry Potter Yule Ball, yes.
And then the last one, which I did not know about.
You did not?
Which is a zombie prom.
There is a zombie prom. I think zombie prom is new this year. Actually, there's one other one that you will mention in a minute, John, that you're not mentioning on purpose. But zombie prom, I think, is new this year. It is a prom of zombies. So I see much shuffling and moaning, and not in a good way. So that'll be kind of interesting. I don't know. I am very excited about that. I think that's part of the Apocalypse Rising track. That is doing that prom. So zombie prom should be very good. I want to see some of the best zombies in their really great prom dress. If you have not seen a movie, this will be a very funny rec, which is called Dance of the Dead, which actually has a zombie prom as a part of this movie. Great flick. It was actually filmed in Georgia. It's a lot of fun. So
I want to jump back
like zombies.
I want to jump back to something you said just a minute ago, which is you said not shuffling and moaning, not in a good way. What would be in a good way? Never mind.
That's for a weekend. This podcast, not for this one.
What was the fourth one that I was missing?
But the one that you're missing actually is the gentleman who we're going to be talking to tonight, who is Wayne Hutchinson, who is the director of Whedonverse. And they actually this year, if I am correct, are doing a Browncoats ball. Is that correct, Wayne, or do I have it wrong? and I'm going to be embarrassed if I do.
You're not embarrassed, and we call it the shindig.
Yay! The shindig. Sorry, the Broncos shindig is not a ball. Although the Broncos ball, it kind of, you know, that alliteration thing. So tell me about, so this is Wayne, but tell us about the shindig. What is this going to be this year?
Well, what the shindig is actually, if you look back at Firefly, there was an episode of Firefly called Shindig, and it was all about the crew going to a big, fancy, highbrow ball, and they were extremely out of place because they're a bunch of social misfits and pirates. And in the entire episode, they end up picking a big fight, and it ends up in a duel to the death. And so it's not quite the same terms that we throw the shindig on, but we do encourage all the fancy dress. And we have a lot of Firefly-themed music, like, you know, some of the bands that show up, like Emerald Rose and Bedlam Bards and Broad Daganian Bards, and I totally said that wrong, and I'll never say it right, so I'm sorry. And it's really fun, and it's a lot of dancing and just hooting and hollering, and we go until the sun comes up sometimes, and it's fun.
Really? You go that long? So
well,
you have Emerald Rose there. You know, I know. I'm old and tired. I don't know about you, man. I'm taking a nap.
Yeah, I'm getting old.
I'm getting old. I'm taking a nap. It's like date. And you're doing this on Saturday?
Saturday
correct?
Night. Yes, Saturday night starting at about 10:30 at the Weston Peachtree Ballroom.
Yep. And that is I've said it already on one podcast, and I'll say it again. That's an absolutely gorgeous ballroom.
Yeah.
It's huge. It's beautiful. You're going to have a lot of space. Going to have a great stage, I'm assuming, for the setup. I know there's not a stage actually set up in ballrooms usually. But we do set them up for Dragon Con, and they're just gorgeous. So
yeah,
I think it will be
awesome.
A very, very good thing. Yeah. And so you've got Emerald Rose, and I will say it wrong, which is the Brobdingnag Bards. I'm totally missing that.
I'm going to say it right for you. Brobdingnagian Bards. They're actually
Brobdingnagian Bards. Okay. And so only two bands or three bands or – was there another one
scheduled to appear as well? I don't have confirmation back on that yet, but they are there every year, so I'm just going to assume because they're an incumbent performer that they're going to be there again. So
they'll show up and have fun. So that'll be great.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So and now your track used to do the Buffy prom, and then last year you went over to the shindig? Was that the change?
Actually, 2007 was the first year that we actually did the shindig, and we've done it every year since. Although it has been going on at Dragon Con since 2004.
So, really? Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
It was kind of a rogue party up until 2007, and then we decided to adopt it and make it bigger and better. So
very cool.
Well, let me jump back a little bit there, Wayne. And first of all, hey, how you doing? The other thing is, tell me a little bit about yourself. How did you? What was your first Dragon Con experience, and then how did you become a track director for Whedonverse? And it has an interesting history. It wasn't actually originally called Whedonverse, right?
No, it was not. I'll take you back. I'll answer your first question there about my first Dragon Con experience. One day, I'd always heard of Dragon Con. I grew up in Atlanta, and I'd actually been there a couple times when I was in high school, back in the late 80s, early 90s, and it was kind of more of a comic book con back then, so it was not quite what it is now, and I believe it was over at the World Congress Center, if I'm not mistaken, but then I moved out of Atlanta for a while and came back and, settled down again, and one day I came home from work, and my wife was looking at the computer, and she says, you know, hey, do you want to go to Dragon Con? And I think this was 2003, and I said, yeah, sure, why not? I didn't think she'd like it, though, because I thought it'd be all comic books and, a lot of people and fandoms she went into. She goes, well, they have this Buffy track there, and I want to go because this is the last season of Buffy, and I'm really huge. And so we went, and we met a lot of people. I mean, we really hit it off. We fell in love with Dragon Con the first year we went together. We stayed just Saturday and Sunday, and then we've been back every year since. And we worked as volunteers on and off staff our second year and beyond for the Buffy and Angel track. I did a lot of things for the former track director, Trish Williams, and Melissa was actually on staff. My wife Melissa was actually on staff before I was, and we just did different things for her. And then in 2006, I believe that was the final year of the Buffy and Angel track, and Trisha was stepping down to go have a personal life. And she was newly married and wanted to go, be married and be a mom and all those things. So she decided she wasn't going to do it any longer. And It was kind of in limbo. And what happened is sometime around the end of 2006 and the beginning of 2007, there was a lot of communication from the fan community about, you know, there should be a Firefly track. There should be a Brown Coat track. And I think the way that DragonCon took it is said, well, there's still a lot of Buffy fans. There's still a lot of Angel fans. Why don't we make it a combination Joss Whedon track, and we'll call it the Whedon Universe. And they appointed a director named Kathy Dawson, who was already on staff, because she had an interest in it. And before Con came, she couldn't make it. But she had put me on staff, and I was kind of acting as her second up to that point and was handling a lot of the programming. And she recommended me for a director position, and it stuck. And I've been running with it ever since 2007. So that's how I came to be where I'm at.
Cool. So your first year was the first year it was actually called Whedonverse, right?
Whedon Universe track, and we call it Whedonverse too. It's just, but yeah, that was the first year I was on, was 2007. So this will be my fourth year as a director.
Now, this is going to sound strange because I actually do know the answer to this, and I think most people that are listening to this probably know the answer to this. But what does the Whedon Universe track encompass?
Thursday night.
What all is encompassed in there?
I didn't know there'd be Germans on the German on the questions.
Sorry, that's my job. That's my job.
No, anyway, well, let me start from the very beginning. Joss Whedon kind of made his big break in 1992 with the original film Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and then he came back in full force in 1997 with the television show Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which then spun off the television show Angel. And then after that, we got a very popular but short-lived series in the form of Firefly. And then we saw a lot of comics from Dark Horse and Marvel from Joss Whedon, based on the show, some based on previous franchises like X-Men. Then we saw Dr. Horrible come out in 2008, and that's something that we honor every year since it's come out. And then most recently, Dollhouse. And in the future, we'll be talking about the Marvel Avengers, because Joss has been selected to direct the Avengers movie, and we're really excited about that.
Cool, yeah. Because I was actually trying to think. I actually forgot about Dollhouse, and that's not a bash on Dollhouse, though. We can have a
sure it didn't.
No,
it was
another
one that went down before its port. Yeah, it was cut down before it got really popular. So.
Yeah, I mean, I have some issues with the finales, but we'll. That's for a whole different podcast altogether. But yeah. So he's been on television pretty much steady since what? That'd be 97, right?
Well, even before that, a lot of people don't know this, but he was actually a staff writer on the television series Roseanne back in the late 80s during the last couple of seasons that it was, last few seasons that it was on. Most notably, I think you did a lot of the writing for the character of Darlene, and you can kind of see the dialogue shift in those last couple of seasons where, you know, it's more that what they call Whedonverse dialogue.
Right.
So you can see it. But, you know, and then, of course, his dad was the head writer for the television series The Electric Company back in the 1970s.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Oh, really? Now, I didn't know that. That's kind of awesome.
Yeah, you wrote the line, "Hey, you guys."
So, hey, you guys.
And what a lot of people don't know, too, is that he also, and I don't know the exact history of this, but he also had something to do with Toy Story, which I don't remember if he wrote the original script or if he touched up the script or what.
He wrote the screenplay.
The screenplay.
He's touched up a lot of scripts, right?
Absolutely. He's actually one of those people that he's kind of the go-to guy when a script needs fixing, for lack of a better term. There's the South coming out in me. He's the guy they go to a lot of times. Him, you know, there's a lot of people, J.J. Abrams, but, you know, it's not just Joss. If you look at some of the people that he's hired to work with him, he always hires stellar writers. I mean, you have Jane Espenson, who's probably my favorite writer that Joss ever hired. She's wrote so many episodes of Buffy and Angel. But, you know, she was also the lead writer on Battlestar Galactica Season 3, Season 4. She's one of the lead writers on Caprica. And she co-created the show Warehouse 13.
And I adore Warehouse 13. Snappy banner, all of it. It is an awesome, awesome show.
And I think a lot of that's her. I think a lot of the two main characters going back and forth with their dialogue, it's got to be her because it's very recognizable to a lot of things I realize. But it's a great show, too. So.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, you know, whenever I see these shows with writers like Ben Edlund, you know, because he's working with Supernatural, and Doug Petrie and Marty Knox and all these guys that really spent their time writing under Joss on Buffy, I just think that, you know, it's like Joss has gone viral all over television shows. There aren't too many television shows in the sci-fi genre on television today that don't have a writer on staff that didn't work for Joss Whedon or with him at some point. And that's huge for me, you know, because I'm a huge fan.
So let me ask you, in the you've been doing this now for, what would that be, 3 years, right? Fourth year?
Yeah, it's my fourth year.
I mean, as director, but you've been on staff.
I've actually, you know what, it's going to make a few people mad, but I've only been on staff 4 years. Officially.
Well, but yeah, a lot of us start on unofficially staff, and then something happens, and it's like, whoops! Oh, wow! Really? Seriously? Okie dokie. So, but now one of the things too that we do, you and I do, for our tracks together, is we do a spirituality and religion panel. You do a lot of things, not just about the shows, but about a lot of the themes and the ideas from the shows.
Oh, absolutely.
So what are you doing this year on that kind of stuff?
Ooh, that's a good question. Well, I think we kind of stepped it up this year, Lee, to be honest with you.
Oh, awesome.
If you look on look at our schedule, we've got our first discussion panel starts off. It's called Losing My Religion, and it's a discussion on how Captain Malcolm Reynolds of Firefly loses his faith in war. At the same time, Shepherd Book discovers his faith through strife. And it's about how these two characters contrast and compare to one another. And, you know, there's a lot of religious themes. It's like when I did an interview for the Signal podcast a couple of weeks ago, and I told them that one of the things I really like about Joss is that it is those underlying themes. It is the things that you don't see upon first glance when you're watching his shows. It's that first coat of paint that the second one's been painted over, that stuff that you really look for. I mean, Joss in the Firefly Companion explained the characters aboard Firefly as fringe characters. They weren't pretty in the middle. They weren't like the characters you see on Grey's Anatomy or other characters. These are people that are living out in the most desolate parts of space with little or no resources and nothing, no money to their name, scraping and getting by, and they're living on the fringe. And he writes fringe characters very well. And I think that that's sort of the themes that we kind of talk about in the track. I mean, we talk about everything from a huge theme in Joss's work is feminism. As you know, he's one of the largest celebrity supporters of equality now. And he really writes really strong female characters, which is a cliche when I say it, but it is true. He writes very strong male characters, not to the point where they're overly strong and demeaning to women. They become equal counterparts of the feminine characters as well. And, you know, he sets a lot of really good examples in his works. He sets some bad examples in his works. Not everybody's a good example. But he shows that even people that you can adore and love are flawed and human. And, you know, it really is a really good encyclopedia of the human condition to watch all seven seasons of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and to see how people really need each other and sometimes they don't need each other.
Well, and actually, it's always been something that I've thought with the Joss shows, I will always try to add an H to that, and I know better, is that you come for the fun and you stay for the depth.
Yeah.
I mean, he kind of suckers you in, and he really, really does. And actually, one of the shows that I see that the most in is, if you watch it in correct order, is Firefly. You get suckered into, okay, this is fun. Space cowboys, you know, ride 'em cowboy. That's awesome. And then all of a sudden you really get the depth. And I think the movie did a great job with that. I think the other thing there and what I've always found very interesting is that when you watch and you rewatch, and a lot of people had a lot of issues with season 6 and season 7 of Buffy, but to be very honest to me, yeah, maybe they weren't my favorites because they weren't a lot of the fun stuff, but they had to be told. It was the end, and the end is never always, it's never pretty. And right. He gets that. I think he gets it. He pulls a lot out of the writing that gets it, and he pulls a lot out of the actors with the writing to get it. So I've always felt very involved in them when I watch it that way, which is probably why I haven't watched The Last of Dollhouse, because people are like, yeah, you're kind of going to be mad. Even if you didn't like the show, you're kind of going to be mad that they're ending it now, because you can see where it could have gone. And it's like, oh, awesome. Yeah, I don't need to do that. I was already mad about one show. I don't need to be mad about another one.
Well, you know, Joss actually did get a pretty good opportunity and a pretty decent timeline and a pretty decent budget to finish Dollhouse with, so it mm-hmm. could have been much worse. I actually was okay with the ending. What I wasn't okay with it was ending. That's what I wasn't okay with, even more than the storyline. Mm-hmm. I really liked Dollhouse. I mean, it was really good. I mean, if you're a man, you know, that likes spies and things like that, like I do, and conspiracies and, you know, gunfights and knife fights and just plain out, violence, but violence with a purpose. I mean, it was a great show, but it also had a very cerebral effect too. It was actually, you know, digging into someone's brain, both literally and figuratively, and finding out what makes them tick and how that you could use that to your advantage or use that to someone else's advantage. And it basically shows what happens when man goes too far, both on a personal and a technological level. And I think that was a pretty good show. I liked it a lot.
Oh, yeah. So.
Yeah, I did think I agree. It did end too soon. My only complaint, I guess, with the ending is I just felt like the ending was a little forced for my taste. But of course, you know, what are you going to do? You've been given a warning. You've basically said, you know, you've got four episodes, six episodes, whatever it was, from the end to wrap this up. So anyway, beyond that. So let me ask you, with the guests that you've had in the past, do you have a particular memory that sticks out? I know you love everyone, all the directors love all their guests, but
all of our people.
Is there any memory that sticks out since you've been on staff that you can remember from one of your guests?
Oh, you're going to make me choose, aren't you?
No, again, you know, we love all of the guests.
I do, actually. I actually spend some time talking to the guests and getting to know them. I've never been one to fanboy out much, even before going to Dragon Con, so I think I do okay with them when I talk to them. But as far as favorite, I've had a lot of favorite moments with guests. You know, even back before I was on staff, one of my most memorable things was in 2004, Julie Benz came. Now, Julie Benz back then was famous for having been on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Now she's famous for being on just about everything else. Dexter, she was huge on Dexter for three mm-hmm. seasons. And she's been on all sorts of shows, doing all sorts of different roles, and she's got a new show out called No Ordinary Family.
Wasn't she Emmy nominated for Dexter?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. She didn't win, though. I saw the Twitter. It was very sad. I was pulling for her. So. But she was standing outside the track room over in the Hyatt one time and was talking about just waiting to go in, and I had the good fortune to kind of be one of the two people that escorted her over from the Walk of Fame to our track room, and I was sitting there talking to her, and I asked her what she did before she got into acting, and she said, I was a figure skater. I was an Olympic trial figure skater. She was an Olympic hopeful, and she broke her ankle during trials.
Oh, no.
And reverted to acting, and I just thought, knowing that story, and never hearing anybody ask her about it, and since then has always been kind of a cool thing. I always like Ron Glass. When Ron Glass from Firefly comes, I always like him. And, you know, even though he was on Firefly, I'm a huge Firefly fan, I really liked Ron Glass and Barney Miller more than anything.
That's exactly. Every time I see Ron Glass, I don't think Firefly. I think Barney Miller.
And, you know, the fact that you told me I was too young to remember him on Barney Miller.
But actually, thank you so much for saying that, sir. Whenever I see Ron Glass, the picture in my head is when he's trying to look for a new apartment in Barney Miller, and he's on the phone to somebody, and he keeps, like, putting his hand over it and going, "Yonkers." For Yonkers, because he doesn't want to admit that he's going to have to, because he has some money issues and he has to look for an apartment in Yonkers. And I just howl at that scene every time I see it. So he's always been great, and I've loved him in everything. So, yeah, sorry.
he's done a lot of neat roles since then too. Not, you know, and it's really worth it to go out to IMDb and check him out, because you're like, oh yeah, that was him. Oh yeah, that was him. Oh, that was 1987.
Oh, wow,
that was
him.
I've done that with a lot of, you know, those are pretty cool people that I've had person to person conversations with that I thought I never would. But as far as, you know, lighting up a room and bringing the entire Q&A session to life and giving the other three or four panelists up on the table hell, no one, and I do mean no one, tops Nathan Fillion. Nathan Fillion, hands down, cannot be beat in a Q&A, and he will find a way to embarrass someone, even if it's himself. You know, so
really,
my favorite Q&A was probably the ones that he did back in 2008 for us. It was just absolutely amazing. The guy never turns it off. That's not his act. That is who he is. You're backstage with him, and he's giving Alan Tudyk a hard time. And you're backstage there, and he's giving the two lovely ladies that were with this Marina Backer and Jewel State a hard time. He's giving me a hard time, everyone else a hard time. You know, making fun of the way I was holding my camera when I was taking pictures of them for our website. Just, it never ends. The guy never stops being funny, and I just couldn't believe it. So it's really cool for me to have a guest like that said, all right, there's no stress here. He's got this. I'm just going to step aside and let it go. And
yeah.
You know, that was kind of cool. I have to tell you, the last year, Kristy Swanson was a big surprise for me. I was really glad to see her. That's my generation, late 80s, early 90s. So I was really impressed to see her. And this year, I'm really excited about all eight of my guests that are coming, but I'm really excited a lot about Luke Perry, because I followed him in other things other than Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And I'm a huge fan of his. Plus, I probably have two or three box sets downstairs that he can sign for me this year. So,
Ooh, even better. Yeah,
I'm a huge Luke Perry fan. Everybody around me knows that I love him. I loved him on 90210. Was the only reason I ever watched that show. But I just thought, I really thought he was kind of a James Dean of the 1990s, and I really liked him a lot, and I still do. He's a good actor. He's solid. He's a solid actor, and that's what matters. So.
That's very cool. Cool. You don't get a lot of people that admit they watch 90210, so I'm very proud of you for admitting you watch 90210.
Well, there were pretty girls on that show, too.
I'm sensing a theme. So, you mentioned you had eight guests. Who are the eight guests you have this year?
All right. Well, we have Marina Backron, Jewel State, Sean Marr, and Mark Shepard, all representing the Firefly side of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And then over on the Buffy and Angel side of the house, we have Elizabeth Rome, Luke Perry. I'm calling these from memory, so let me see if I can get this one right. I'm sorry, who? James Marsters. Oh, God, how did I forget James?
How could you forget James?
And Armin Shimerman from,
yes,
also from Buffy and also Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
That's kind of cool.
So what kind of panels are, I mean, we talked a little bit about the doing the various alternative type panels, if you will. What other things can we look forward to from Whedon Versus here?
I'll tell you what, we are action-packed this year. I don't know how I'm going to get any sleep or anything to drink while I'm at Dragon Con this year, so I guess I have to get me a good water bottle or something, or a thermos. But
big water bottle.
And that's adult beverages for those of you out there listening. So.
I don't know what you mean.
Yeah. We got a couple of good things this year. You know, this year we got a lot of stuff going on around the track in the form of, fan contributions. We have a lot of fan contributions this year. The first of being a screening of a Dr. Horrible fan film called Horrible Turn Screening. Horrible Turn, I'm sorry. I redid it right off the schedule. That was real smart. But what Horrible Turn is, it's just a prequel to the 2008 Dr. Horrible that was released. And it was just done by a bunch of guys that got together and decided they were going to do a high-quality production of this. You know, I'm usually not one for fanfic or for fan films. I usually like the way things were presented to me by the original creator. That's the way I like it. I'm very much set in my ways about that. But I watched this one night. Matthew over in the independent film track told me, you got to see this. Are you interested in having these people out this year? I said, I don't know, man. I don't like fan films. I don't like fanfic. But I'm pretty open-minded, so I'll watch anything once. And I watched it, and I loved it. It was great. I watched it four times that night so I could go back and
understand
most of the songs. Then I got in touch with the creators, and I said, yeah, I'm going to have you at Dragon Con. I'm going to do a screening for your film, and I'm going to have a panel for you to talk about the making of your film. And that's that's opening both doors wide open for me, because like I said, it's really hard to get me to do anything that's not original programming. So that's one thing I'm really excited about what they're going to do this year. I've also got some panelists that are coming in that are actually college professors and people that teach philosophy at universities and teach other pop culture and social sciences and things like that at some of our universities around the United States here. And they're going to come in and talk about some papers that they've written and some presentations that they've made at the university level on themes in Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Dollhouse, and things like existentialism in Dollhouse and gender and rhetoric in Buffy. So going back to that dialogue I was speaking about later, we're going to talk about how smart that funny dialogue actually is and how deep it actually goes. And these are some really smart folks. Some of them have, I know a couple of them have a PhD and some master's degrees in there. So I'm really looking forward to hearing their perspective, more of an academic perspective on these things. And I think that'll be rich for our fans. Let's see. I got a couple other good things. As usual, Buffy Horror Picture Show and the Dr. Horrible Live Show. If anybody doesn't know what that is, if you've ever seen Rocky Horror Picture Show, where the troops go out and they perform it while it plays behind them on screen. Well, we do the same thing with the musical episode of Buffy, Once More with Feeling, from season 6, where all the characters just randomly burst out in songs and dance routines. And we do the same thing with Dr. Horrible. We play all three episodes of Dr. Horrible. We take these musical contributions that Joss has given to us, and we actually make them more than just come to this room and watch this. We're going to make it interactive and live. So we have people that rehearse all year round and do choreograph movements and things with each other and lip sync to these songs, and really maybe they spend about 5 to 6 hours in the entire year in person in the same room with each other. So it all comes together at the very end. We all practice and rehearse individually. That's on Friday night. That's going to be a real hoot. That's a huge draw. We always fill up the room. Sometimes I've had to turn people away from the room to do that. So get there early on Friday at the Sheraton. Starts at 7. You might want to line up about 5:30 or so, but it's going to be great. Of course, I mentioned the Shindig on Saturday. That's a huge thing. But before the Shindig on Saturday, I'm really happy to announce that we have a movie premiere at Dragon Con this year of an independent fan film called Brown Coat's Redemption. And I've been working closely with the creators of that, and we're going to show that in the Weston Peachtree Ballroom a few hours prior to the Shindig kicking off. That's going to be at 7 p.m. on Saturday night. That's going to be a full room. Even as big as that room is, it's going to be a full room. So if you are planning on going to see Redemption, get there early, because it will pack and we can't squeeze people into the room. But we're going to see the film. We're going to get a few minutes afterwards. It's going to be kind of tight right up against the Shindig, but we're going to get a few minutes afterwards to bring out the cast and crew, let them introduce themselves, take a few bows, and then we'll go all have a Shindig in the ballroom for the rest of the night, and we'll have cash bars in the Shindig, and it's a real party. It's a lot of people, a lot of music, a lot of fun, and we'll do that. And I think, let's see, I'll quit talking in a minute, but on Sunday,
Sunday,
we have the Whedon Universe Costume Contest at 5:30, which is our big event there, and that's where we actually have gifts and prizes to give out to people that they don their best Whedon Universe character costumes, and they come and compete in a big competition. We have a lot of different categories, some of which include, best budget costume, best costume from Dollhouse, or most clever, judge's choice, where all the judges get together. And we pull judges in, some of them being some of the, guests from around the con that come to promote comic books or other shows or stuff, and we try to get them on there and that actually know these characters and know the shows and can judge them, and they judge them for authenticity. And I'll tell you what, last year the room was packed for that, and I saw some real good costumes. Really good, the ones that impressed me, and a couple of them were people on my staff. So, but they weren't eligible to win. So don't worry, you ain't gonna compete with the staff.
Now, I don't know if we mentioned this. We did mention in the previous podcast, but you are in the Westin. We did mention that you're in the ballroom, but you're housed in the Westin this year, which is new for Dragon Con, of course.
Right.
And new officially for Dragon Con. Now, whereabouts are you? I know the alternate history is first door on the right. Are you guys first door on the left, or?
We are right behind them. International D. I think they're in International A or C. I don't know. But we're in International D. All the programming on in the West End, including the ballroom, is on, I'm going to say the 8th floor, and it's going to be the 6th. But if I'm wrong, go to the other floor. But it's the 8 or 6th floor. But it's all there together. It's laid out kind of in a – there's a huge lobby area in the middle, and then there's the ballroom across the hall, and then the two track rooms are going to be over there. So we're right next to each other, right next to – Alternate History, Steampunk Heaven. We're really glad to have Cindy and those guys next to us. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and we made the...
Oh, I think so, yeah.
I made the realization that there is some crossover there, too, especially with Firefly and Alternate History.
You're absolutely right. Firefly is steampunk.
Yes.
Look at Mal's revolver and tell me that's not steampunk.
Pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
I want to ask you our traditional our question that we always ask, which is, if you could have anyone for your track that, you know, price is no option, you know, you can get whoever you want, they can be alive or dead, who would it be for Whedonverse?
That's a good question. You said alive or dead too.
Yeah.
Alive or dead. Yep.
Of course they wouldn't arrive dead. They would be alive when they showed up, so.
Jim Morrison.
Okay.
No, we're like,
sure, why not?
You said dead, and the first person that came to mind was Jim Morrison, so I don't know. What does that say about me? It's going to have to be Joss Whedon. I mean, who else? He has never been there. I'd love to hear him come and talk. I'd love to see the crowds go nuts and crazy, and I'd love to see the guys just really genuinely funny. That's really from the directing side. You know, I could probably give you an answer for which director, which actor, and which writer, if you wanted to.
Go ahead.
Writers, it'd have to be Jane Espenson. I would love to have Jane Espenson come to DragonCon for 1,000 different reasons, but I would love to have her. And then as far as actors go, that's a good question because there's so many of them and there's so many good ones. But, it's got to have to be Neil Patrick Harris. I would love to see Neil Patrick Harris come to DragonCon. Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah, hands down. I choose him first. I choose him twice. I mean, I love the guy.
No, I mean, I agree that he's very talented. I think he would, first of all, I think he would adore DragonCon from some of the things I've ever read from him. But I am surprised you pick him before Sarah Michelle Gellar. So that's kind of.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, and I would like to see Sarah Michelle Gellar come to conventions, but. The reason I'd say is I love the character of Buffy. She's my favorite character on the entire series. Out of all the ones to choose from, I pick her all the time. So I'll preface my statement saying that she doesn't do for conventions very much. So I think if we ever had her at Dragon Con and it was her first convention, I think she'd get a little bit of culture shock. And because that's not her scene. But yeah, she hasn't done conventions a lot. But you know, normally I would have said Felicia Day as well, but she came last year, so I'm not going to make her eligible. It'd have to be Neil Patrick Harris, absolutely. Only because I think he would sop up Dragon Con with a biscuit. I mean, he would love it. So.
Oh, he would love it. Oh, yeah. There's not a question. He would adore it. I cannot imagine that he would not.
So. And we would adore him back just as much. So.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Awesome.
That's good.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Lee.
No, I mean, it's interesting to think about how much this track has grown, starting from Buffy, then to Angel, and then becoming the Whedonverse of all the shows that he's done, and it's going to get even bigger, which is just, you never know what happens. Welcome to DragonCon.
It's wildfire. It's wildfire. Yeah. You know, if it keeps up, if it gets any bigger and better, I'm going to have to actually pay for my Gmail account because I keep overrunning. Like, I come in every day and I got 4 pages of messages. And,
oh, my God.
It's getting crazy. But, I mean, yeah, it's gone from a little small room. You know, I think we were in Manila one year in the Hyatt. And, you know, there's a lot of tracks that have got that, you know, pardon the term, traction in DragonCon that are just blown up. Whedonverse is one. Star Wars track is awesome. I've seen them go up and down. And Brandi Rhodesy over there does a great job. But she was also over there in the Hyatt and kind of the sub levels of the Hyatt with small room. She got a bigger room last year. And then this year, and I don't know what she did to do this, this year she got my room that I was in at the Marriott she got all four of those rooms from Marriott.
Wow.
So I don't know who I either ticked off or who she charmed. To get moved out of my primo next to the Starbucks room in the Marriott, but I hope it works out well for it. That was a good location for us, and I really hope it takes Star Wars and puts them, you know, over the top this year with all that extra room and that great location. So,
yeah, you did have a great, great location. You did. Oh.
Yeah, we were right across from the Blood Drive 1 year. Think about mm-hmm. it. The vampire fan track across from the Blood Drive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Works.
You can't buy that.
So what's your stance on sparkly vampires then? Never mind. Don't answer it because you can't answer that properly.
What's my stance on sparkly vampires?
Never
heard. Vampires don't sparkle. Period.
I think actually the greatest thing is the shirt that I saw a couple of years ago, which is "Then Buffy staked Edward the end."
My wife is sitting on the couch wearing that shirt right now.
Is she really?
Absolutely.
Then Buffy staked Edward the end.
Absolutely. She's wearing that one. You know, I'll tell you, you guys talked to Mary the other night.
Yeah.
The young adult literature track. She was actually over at my house on Saturday night. We were having a little party, and she was hanging out with me, and we were talking Twilight, and I think she liked it when I said, I actually don't mind the Twilight series. It's actually a pretty good series. I just wish that in the first 5 minutes of the movies, I haven't read the books now, so I'm going to say movies. In the first 5 minutes of the first movie, that the three main characters, Edward, Bella, and Jacob, would have taken a car ride together and went off the side of a cliff and died and burned in flames. The rest of the series would have been excellent after that. Because the Cullens are actually very interesting people. Alice is a good character. Emmett's a good character. But the rest of them, eh. So.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you saw the fan posting that went around back when it was a horrible movie. Wolfman, is that what it was called?
With what's his name?
Benicio del Toro. Anyway, whatever it's called. For life of me, I thought it was Wolfman. But anyway, the whether it was fake or not, the posting that went out, this lady, basically a girl, complaining that they've taken apart what Twilight built as the greatest, you know, Wolfman. How dare you acting as though Wolfman did not exist, werewolves did not exist prior to Twilight. And it's like, really?
Oh, my heart hurts. Don't.
This is where we're going. Yes, I can't believe you can't. The vampires die when they go out in the sunlight. Uh huh. Yeah.
Well,
no, that's what happens.
I'll tell you what. That's funny that you say that. Well, the werewolf lore has been around forever. I mean, it was even done on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. They had a character that was a werewolf. So,
of course, awesome.
Being Human is a really good show that depicts a vampire, a werewolf, and a ghost all living in the same flat together in London together very well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny that they say that because right now there are two main fandom offerings that have werewolves pitted against vampires. Currently, you have Eclipse, which is in theaters right now, and mm-hmm. then you have, which I think is 1,000% better, True Blood on HBO. And what makes True Blood better is they use real wolves. I mean, they had this whole featurette about how these are real wolves, and these are real wolves chasing these people down, and we have trainers on hand, and you can tell the difference. It looks a lot cooler to see the real wolves on TV on True Blood, but you know, I just think they do it so much better. And then, of course, you know, if you watch The Vampire Diaries, which I'm a huge fan of, by the way, really good series, this next season there's going to be werewolves pitted against vampires. I mean, it's an old story. It works every time it's been done. But quite frankly, if anybody thinks it was done first on Twilight, then they don't have never seen anything like Underworld or anything like that.
Well, it definitely had the feel of being a, you know, like a teenage girl that was writing the post. So,
well, you know, I'll tell you what. When it comes to teenage girls in Twilight, I don't bash Twilight. I'll tell you why I don't bash Twilight.
Because those teenage girls are mean.
No, well, my 13-year-old daughter's sitting next to me right now, and she's not a huge fan of Twilight. She read all the books. She's more on the Harry Potter side. This girl reads about 4 books a week, so those
good
are long
girl.
But the thing about it is that was watching some footage of Kevin Smith, I believe, up at Gen Con or OmegaCon or something, talking about don't bash Twilight, don't bash these girls. One, he's got a 13-year-old daughter just like me. But the other thing is he says, in 5 years, these are the 18-year-olds that are going to be buying all the stuff that you've graduated to. When you were 13, you didn't really like the X-Men as much as you do now, or, you know, we all had that moment in our life where we watched something or read something that was kind of cheesy or, you know, on that adult level, but it is marketed to that age group.
Mm-hmm.
In 5 years, you're going to have a bunch of 18 and 20-year-old girls that are going to be running around Dragon Con, going to the Buffy track, going to the Star Trek track, going to whatever tracks are happen to be there at that time, who still have that passion and that affination in their hearts for Twilight and what got them hooked and what got them started. But we all graduate up. We all kind of grow up, not just in New York, but, you know, science fiction as well. When I was 18 years old, I thought Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was the best cartoon on TV, but still pretty cool. But now I've graduated to other things, you know, that's more dark and more adult and more deep. So Don't hate on the Twilight fans.
I don't hate on them, but, well, actually it is. Actually, it is fun to pick on them, though.
Oh, yeah, and that wasn't directed at you personally. That was just a general statement. Don't hate on them. At least wait till they're 18 and still loving it. It's, you know who bothers me as far as Twilight fans goes? It's 35-year-old moms.
My wife is one of those.
I've read science fiction before that have never cared for anything that I had to say about science fiction, and they're wearing, I love Edward shirts. I can't get over that. It doesn't make sense to me.
Well, let me ask you our final question, in which I actually just started asking the last podcast, which is, I know, as I said in the last one, Lee loves to punish the Need Coffee folks by having them close out her track on Sunday. How do you guys close out your track on Sunday?
Monday,
excuse me. Yeah, close it out on Sunday. No, close it out on Sunday. No, wait a minute. There's a whole other day. Monday.
There's a whole other day.
How do you close
we've done a lot of different things. You know, we've had a Hollywood Squares panel where we dress 9 people up as Whedon verse characters, and we do a big game of Whedon verse Squares. We've done a Whedon verse Jeopardy. We've done the Whedon verse meet and greet, where, you know, basically it's, we don't want to say dating, but it's the Whedon verse hookup panel, where you can say, okay, I want to find that person I saw on Saturday and hook up with that. You get their number and contact, and make a friend, and, you know, everything. But we do all kinds of different things. This year, I don't know what we're going to do. I don't ever make it to the dead dog party because my babysitter meter is running close to red on Mondays. So I got to get back up here to the North Georgia mountains in time to pick up my kids and stuff. But we've done all sorts of things. Sometimes we've closed the doors after the last panel and just sat in there and cleaned up the room. And me and the staff have had a nice drink together and just talked about, you know, what we're going to do next year. But nothing really, nothing with a lot of fanfare. We kind of go out on a low note. We always have a big celebrity Q&A on Monday that usually ends up being pretty good. And we usually end at that on that. I think we're going to do that this year. We have a Firefly guest extravaganza that we're ending with this year. So that'll be a way to go out, you know, for Firefly fans.
Cool.
Very cool. That sounds awesome.
All right.
And then I'm just going to pimp our together tracks, which is we're doing the religion and spirituality track again. And if I don't have to cancel it, Wayne, his wife, my husband, and I, along with whichever of our kids are there, are going to be talking about shows you can watch with your kids.
Yep.
Which we're planning on that. If I don't have to cancel it because I have to move things around. But those are two things that we're doing in conjunction together, which I think will be a lot of fun.
Cool. And where can they find more info on your track and, yourself or even just where all your people are hanging out?
Well, we pretty much exist everywhere on the web that you can. So I'll start with our website, WhedonUniverse.com, www.WhedonUniverse.com. Go check that out. The schedule's up there now. We got our theme poster up there this year. Some good site work by Mike Conrad, who's a friend of mine that does me a solid every year and puts up a good-looking website. And then we also have the DragonCon, the Whedon Track Live Journal, which you can link to off of that page. You can follow us on Twitter at Whedon Universe, and I'm pretty active on there. I send out all kinds of little updates, sometimes just thoughts about what I would like to do for Dragon Con or whatever. So that's a really good way to kind of get in my head. And we're on Facebook as well. We haven't done a lot with that yet. We're just waiting to put a bunch of good photos on it. We're going to start off after Con building up our Facebook site so we have some good things for people to look back at. And I think we have a MySpace page. I'm not a MySpacer, but one of my staffers is. So we have a MySpace page as well. But all of which link back to one another. So you, if you get lost in one, you're going to get stuck in the weeds and get lost in the other one. So you know, check us out anywhere there. And if you need to email us, there's email information out there. I answer every email that is sent to me.
And of course, we'll link to all these on the post that this this podcast is attached to. Wayne, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
It's my pleasure.
This was a lot of fun. Thank you. Yay, Wayne.
And I had fun.
And as I say to all the directors, thank you so much for your time and volunteering. And people, they don't get paid, so give them a break. And of course, thank you to your staff as well.
Well, thank you,
Lee. Until next time, we'll
until next time.
Which I think is like tomorrow again. I'm not sure. Anyway, until next time, I'm John, and peace. See you at DragonCon.
Bye, y'all.
This has been a production of The Unique Geek. To leave a comment or suggestion, call us at 833-210-TUG, or email us at thegeeks@theuniquegeek.com. Follow The Geeks on Twitter, @TheUniqueGeek. Visit our listserv at listserv.theuniquegeek.com. This podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons share alike non-commercial license.